Hi, ladies, and welcome to the Story Night podcast. I'm Jessica Campbell, and stories are my passion. It's my honor to host this podcast where real women share real stories of real hope. Each episode features one woman sharing her personal story with you. Too often, we fall into the traps of comparison and judgment, but what if we took the time to hear each other's real stories? Let's remember that we all have a story, and our stories matter. We're so glad you've joined us on this podcast journey. May you find hope and encouragement in this episode's story. Hey, ladies, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Story Night podcast. If this is your first time finding us, welcome. We're so glad you're here. We recommend starting with episode one, where you can hear my conversation with State Representative Lucetta Elmer, who is providing the platform for Story Night. And in that episode, we talk about the history of Story Night and the vision and where we're going with this current season. Now, if you listened actually to episode two, you heard Lucetta speak at a live event in February of 2025, where she shared some of her story. And tonight's episode guest has a voice you might recognize because she introduced Lucetta at that event. So I'm so glad you get to meet Maria. She's one of Lucetta's friends from childhood, and I'm so glad that she's now part of our Story Night team. So for this episode and for several upcoming episodes, we are going to be meeting the Story Night team. I'm so blessed to have a handful of ladies who help with this outreach because there's no way I could do this by myself. And we wanted you to get to know them and their stories. So let's just start with a brief introduction. Maria, thank you so much for being here and being willing to share your story with the listeners. But before we go, you know, deep dive into your story, would you just say hello and give a brief introduction?
Hi, Jessica. So good to be here. Like Jessica said, my name is Maria Olson, and I have known Lucetta since kindergarten. I'm married. I grew up in Willamina, have lived in Oregon most of my life, but have lived in many states, in another country, have two stepchildren, and my husband and I have one daughter of our own who was born when I was 32, so I was an quote unquote old mom. I've worked for the same company for 20 years, even though I've traveled and lived in different places. Currently, I'm a client service manager for financial services, but I've held jobs at a pizza parlor, a bank, a prison. Yeah. So I would say that's kind of me in a nutshell.
A fun, spicy mix. And I love it that our listeners can't see you, but you're wearing a hat that's a small town girl. And yet you have this very multicultural story and background and so many experiences. So we want to get to all of that. But before we do, I really want our team members to be able to share with the listeners what it is about Story Night that drew them in. What is it? Why does this matter? And maybe what made you decide to be one of my much needed and appreciated volunteers?
Sure. So I think it's twofold. I love other people's stories. I didn't even realize it, I don't think, until my daughter pointed out, wow, you have a lot of biography books from different people. You know, I have Michelle Obama and Michael McConaughey and Will Smith and Alicia Keys, like just all these different people that I've read their biographies. I just find them so interesting, other people's stories. And also, I think we tend to not know who we are because we are who we are. And so either we feel different or not interesting, or maybe we feel, in my case, I think vanilla. I feel like, oh, I'm the same as everybody else. So I don't matter. And so as you hear other people's stories, you start to pick out pieces like, oh, okay, not everyone thinks like that. And so maybe that makes me different and that helps me understand myself. I'm part of SeroOptimist, and one of the things that we do at a meeting is we have member shares. And women's stories are just, I'm always amazed, like, wow, I had no idea about that person. I know that person, or I thought I knew that person. And when you hear their story, you're just inspired and you feel closer to that person. And so I just think the more we can share our stories and hear other people's stories, it just connects us at a deeper level.
Absolutely. I couldn't possibly agree with you more. I love everything you said. All of those points are so true, and they're so the heart of Story Night. Really quick, because there may be some listeners who don't know what Sir Optimus is.
Huh?
Could you take 30 seconds and explain it? And I'll put the link in the episode
Oh,
notes.
that'd be great. Okay, so Sir Optimist, our tagline is investing in dreams. And so we are really about empowering women to become economically independent and empowered. So globally, we have influence on the UN to globally address women's needs. Locally, we help women who are job ready find clothing through our Sora boutique so that they can go to interviews or once they land the job, dress for the job because that is important to feel confident. We gave out $24,000 this year to local women who are furthering their education.
It's an amazing organization. And there really is some crossover, I think, with what Story Night does and what Sir Optimus does in terms of just caring about women and hearing who they really are, taking away that layer of judgment or comparison or whatever it is that we do, where we assume we know somebody or we assume something about their story or who they are or what they're doing, only to find out we were wrong.
So many times.
So many times. And it was so funny because when I asked you about this, your response even was so similar to so many women, like, well, do I really have a story? Like, you knew you had a story, but you used the word vanilla. And I think I get that response so often. So many women say, I don't really have a story, or I don't have a very interesting story, or I don't have any major drama, something that would, be this like cliffhanger story where you're on the edge of your seat and oh my gosh, what's going to happen next? But every time I talk with women who sort of think that initially and they give me their story outline, I go, are you serious? There's all these interesting things in here and so many the topics that are big and important and relatable and all that. Okay, so without further ado, let's dive into your story. Let's start at the beginning, right? Where were you born? And maybe tell us a little bit about your childhood.
Okay, so I was born right here in McMinnville. If you're familiar with McMinnville, I was born at Walgreens, which used to be the hospital. My family moved to Willamina when I was, I think, about 3 years old. And so I spent my whole life there. So I have a brother and a sister. My sister is 7 years older. My brother is 6 years younger. So that's kind of an interesting dynamic. My sister had a different dad than I did, but he wasn't in the picture. So my dad adopted her. My parents, I think, have a very interesting story. So my dad escaped from Hungary in 1956. He was 18 years old. He was in a Russian prison, tortured. He thinks, he always thought that his mother was the one that turned him in. So he came here to this country by himself at 18 years old, spoke two words of English, okay, and Budweiser, which I jokingly say is probably why he became an alcoholic because do you want Budweiser? Okay. Yeah, Budweiser? Okay. So that's not a great pattern for success. I always say, you come to this country and it's not the successful people who embrace you. It's the people who are also struggling. So he ended up with a group of friends struggling. He got into some trouble, ended up in a prison here in Oregon State Penitentiary for, I think, burglary. I think they stole a keg and he was so drunk he fell out of the getaway car. I mean, it's just a whatever. And my mom and dad met when he got out of prison. My mom was a bartender and he was celebrating, and that was their love story.
Wow. You could write a movie just on that.
I know. Yeah, it's so I think my perspective just growing up was always, it could always be worse. And I think that made me resilient. I think because I grew up in a small town, there were so many great things about that. I have my lifelong friend that came from that time. But I think because my dad was an immigrant, I always knew the world was bigger and the world always felt bigger than me, than my little Willamina, which I think was helpful. I was joked around, like, I was convinced I was adopted because I always felt so different than my family. Which now I think I've equated to, I just didn't feel understood, but I also looked a little different. My brother has blonde hair, blue eyes. All my cousins, blonde hair, blue eyes, tall, big people. you know, you can't see me now, but if you know me, I'm not a big person,
No.
you know? And so I always thought, wow, this, I'm not blonde. I can remember being, we went to this show. It was called the Ramblin' Rod Show. It was a local show in Portland. And I went with my cousins who were all blonde and blue-eyed, and they were all dressed in this like Betsy Ross, Benjamin Franklin. Like they had these cute little outfits. No one else was dressed like that. I don't know, to this day, I don't know why they wore that. I was dressed, you know, here's me, brown hair, short, tiny, you know, brown eyes, dressed in a crocheted top and hat that someone made me. And when we got to the Ramblin' Rod Show, they separated us. So you sat on these bleachers, and all my cousins got to sit together, and I was sitting by myself. And I remember I was 5 years old, and I remember thinking, wow, this hurts. I feel left out. And this, so they had this smile contest, and you would get this pop shop pop that you got to pick. It was a soda. So I thought, you know what? Heck with you, I'm gonna win this. And I smiled my cheesiest self and I won. And I remember I picked a grape pop shop pop out of this grocery cart. I saved it till the ride home and I drank it in front of my cousins.
You just described such a, I mean, in some ways, a simple childhood memory, but what a layered picture
Yeah.
of almost, I don't know, foreshadowing of the world can tell you that you belong over here, but if you smile big enough, you're going to win.
Yep. Yeah. And I think I always felt that, you know, I've had people from our hometown say, wow, I don't know. People say, like, how you did so well, which I don't even know what that means. But I just always knew, even with my insecurities and my doubt and my fear and my, you know, we'll probably get to it later, my struggles with, you know, my appearance, I just always knew I mattered. You know, and I think as I sit in these Soroptimist meetings and I hear girls' stories, I think that's the difference. They feel like they didn't matter. And luckily, with all my parents were struggling with and going through, I felt that.
Yeah.
And that was an important impact in my life. I remember my brother being 5 years old, and we had a kegger to celebrate his 5th birthday, which, oh,
That paints a picture right
that paints
there.
a picture,
Yep.
at a park in Wilmina. But part of that was because we had also found out that my dad's, what we called, and I don't know if this is a technical phrase, but his deportation order had been lifted. So at this time, I'm 11, my brother's 5. So my parents lived with the fear of my dad being deported for that long in their marriage, in my life, and I never knew about it. They protected us from that fear. They were going to Portland. I never even knew my parents left Wilhelmina except to go to McMinnville to shop and bowl. So it was an
Yeah.
amazing way that they informed me, yet protected me. I don't know. It was always this dichotomy in life of small town, big world,
Yeah.
protection, truth, you know, and I just think that's been a foundation of my
Yeah.
life.
You really, you know, are sort of that story of someone who comes from the small town, grew up poor, there's financial insecurity, you're dealing with an alcoholic father, and then so many other things behind the scenes that
Yeah.
you said maybe you didn't even know as a child,
Right.
right? But then by the time you get to your teen years, your resume is pretty full and impressive for your high school years, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I was class president 3 out of the 4 years. I did get nominated the other year, but I was going through some kind of personal things, and I just knew intrinsically, even at 15, like, all right, this probably is a time to take a pause. So I did that. I played varsity softball as a freshman. Sports were a big part of my life. I was in swing choir. Lucetta and I were in youth ledge together. So there was some foreshadowing there for her. Girl State. I went to tag camp, which is talented and gifted. I know now that my mom was in charge of our finances, not my dad. But somehow she made all these things happen. And I know we were behind on property taxes. We didn't have clothes, but somehow I was going to all these things and tag camp that was expensive. And She knew that was important. I was voted most likely to succeed in my class, which is a blessing and a curse. I was salutatorian of my class. My junior year of high school, I applied for two scholarships to be an exchange student because I thought it'll look good on paper. Never in a million years did I dream I would win it. I'm from Willamina. I'm vanilla. Nobody cares what I'm doing. And so I applied for a year in Germany. And then I found out that I won. And I didn't speak German. It meant going to Germany my senior year of high school. But I also knew this was an opportunity. And when you're given an opportunity, you don't turn it down. And so I said yes to that. And so I spent my senior year in Germany as an exchange student who didn't speak German.
So many follow-up questions to that. I feel like that could be a whole episode in and of itself. But just for that, I mean, I don't know, 1 minute of your time in Germany, like the greatest challenge or the greatest joy?
Yes. Yes. I think, first off, you know, you grow up with an alcoholic parent. I think separation from that was key. You know, the whole codependent and codependent no more. Physical distance helped that situation and just clarify some things there. Confidence building in the sense that, you know, I did learn to speak German. It was the greatest time. I got to meet my Hungarian family. I had never corresponded with them because I didn't speak the language. And my German family said, if there's anyone there who can speak German or English, we will take you. So I had one uncle who spoke German. And so I got to meet them for the first time, which was amazing. That was also the period due to, I've always had body image issues. I didn't even remember. I had always said I wanted to live in Maine because I knew the weather was cold and I would never have to wear shorts. So in softball, all these practices, wearing shorts was a nightmare for me. So when I went to Germany, they have great bread and desserts, and I did not sacrifice the experience of those and quickly gained, I think, 20 pounds on an already like feeling I was overweight my whole life, basically. So I became bulimic in Germany.
That's when it started.
That's when it started. Yes. So again, the dichotomy of life, it's the best of times, but also kind of the worst of times as well.
Now, I assume that, you know, all listeners know what bulimia is, but there are going to be two groups of listeners, right? Mm-hmm. Those who have experienced that or maybe are right now and who really, really get it.
Yeah.
And those that they never experienced that, they never have. Maybe they don't know if they know anybody who has gone through that. And they have these, I don't know, preconceived notions or misinformation about what that really is and what it means and what, you know, so if you could take a minute and just, I don't know, maybe pull back the curtain a little bit, I think it's helpful, especially, you know, thinking of like maybe a mom who's listening, whose daughter might be going through this, for her to get that insight on what's going on mentally, emotionally, physically, what are some things that maybe the general public doesn't know.
Sure. You know, and I preface this with saying, like, I have never been treated for, diagnosed with, like, this is just all my own personal insight. So please don't hold me to kind of like any psychological or medical standard. But I think if I really, like you say, pull back the curtain on it, there's different eating disorders, and there's probably more than the two that I'm going to say, bulimia and anorexia. But to me, anorexia is there's a very visual picture that you get of that person. You can see that person is struggling. I think often, in my experience anyway, with bulimia, it was a way for me to continue to stay invisible, which was a comfortable place for me, which is odd because I will stand out in my successes. Like, I'm not afraid to get on stage, but there is this element of, I want to be the backup singer. I want to be in the background. And so bulimia allowed me to do that. I would eat the normal meal that everyone else was eating. So no one knew that I wasn't eating. sometimes for whatever reason, and I don't even know why I would do this, but I would go back in and secretly eat more, even though I wasn't hungry and I didn't really understand that. And then I would purge, and I was constantly weighing myself. I think I would probably during that time would weigh myself 5 times a day. I would, you know, in the morning when I wake up, after that I go to the bathroom, after I ate, I would weigh myself, and then I'd throw up, and then I would weigh myself again so that I could see, oh, wow, I ate a pound of food and now I lost that pound, and it felt like a win for me. And I did lose weight, but it was slow. It appeared to be healthy. No one was concerned about me. I was just, you know, I was doing good things. I was being healthy.
How long did that season last for you?
Oh, I think, so I told you I had my daughter when I was 32. So then I was 18 then when I started, 17 maybe. I know I was doing it after my daughter was born. Not constantly, not, you know, if I just really felt like, wow, I really blew it. I really lost control. I'm going to get that control back, and I'm going to purge. So I don't know when I stopped or what made me stop. Maybe as my daughter got older and I just started realizing, you know, I don't want that for her. Mm-hmm. I don't want there to be this focus around food and weight. And even though if you talk to my daughter, she's 23, she's going to tell you there's always been weight and body image in the conversation. You know, I married a bodybuilder, probably as punishment to myself, as a constant reminder of what I'll never be. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we will get to that marriage and the birth mm-hmm. of your daughter. Before we talk about your college years and young adult mm-hmm. life, do you have just a few words of encouragement for anybody who might be struggling with bulimia?
Oh, gosh. You know, obviously get professional help for it. I struggled for too long with it. If you don't have resources and access to that kind of care, talk to a trusted friend. I think just talk about it, you know, not the shame. I'm not going to sit there and say, you're beautiful. And you have to tell yourself that message. You know, you have to, through a long process, come to terms with that. And that's going to take you much longer to come to terms with than you need the help, if that makes sense. Like, you need the help before you're going to get to that point. So don't wait for that message. So that would just be it. I think just get it out in the open. Find someone to be accountable to.
Share your story.
Share your story.
Share your story with somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for being willing to talk about that.
Sure.
These are the kinds of chapters that don't get talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And what would our culture be like if we did? If we talked about all of these chapters that, you know, maybe just get hidden or put aside, or they have shame connected to them, or guilt, or insecurity, or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, you come back from Germany.
Yes.
And you're going to go off to college and have just a whole other adventure, right?
Yeah. So I started out at Chemeketa's Community College. I never really knew what I wanted to be. Then went to Southern California to go to college with my then boyfriend. That was a fun experience. I loved going there, had fun in Southern California, came back, got married, got a job. You know, we got married so young. He turned 19 on our honeymoon. I was 22. Never went back to college, took some classes probably at Chemeketa for my job here and there. So started working at the prison in Sheridan. And there's this, you know, guy working there that I find very attractive. But I'm married. He's married. And honestly, we don't even really talk, even though we're in the same department. Like, there was this line I knew, I don't even want to go there because it feels dangerous. And then my first husband, he was spending a lot of times in chat rooms. There was a person that was, you know, he was hanging around a lot with, and just started making comments about how he wished he was with these other women. And so my current husband, who was working at the prison with me, he was also married, like I said, and we just we kind of started talking. I'm sugarcoating this a lot because even retrospectively, I feel very guilty about, you know, being married, and he was also married. But we did at that time then decide to split up with our current spouses. So Kyle left his wife and I left my husband. And then we got together and we were both still working at the prison at the same time.
And at this point, you're about 29, 30?
I'm 29. Yes, I'm 29 years old. And then we dated for about a year, got married in 1999. And then I actually got pregnant, had a miscarriage, which another one of those things you start talking about once you experience it. Wow, there are a lot of people who have miscarriages that you don't know about. And then 9/11 happened. I went to donate blood and they said, is there a chance, you know, that you could be pregnant? Because we don't want to draw blood if you're pregnant. And I was like, I don't think so. They said, well, go home, take a pregnancy test just to be sure, come back. I go home, I take a pregnancy test, and I was pregnant. And that's how I found out that I was pregnant, was because of 9/11. Yeah.
And how long after your loss was this?
About a year. Yeah, it was about a year.
So you go through, you know, the loss and some grief. And again, like you said, one of those things that is so common that I think our culture just sort of says, well, it happens.
Yeah.
And they.
Yeah. And I had gone, I was active. I worked out, ran all the time. And I had gone on a run the day before. And so much blame I put on myself. And I remember I went to Dr. Barker here in town, and I don't know if anyone knows Dr. Barker, but he is very serious, straight laced, you know, just no emotion really from him. And I just remember feeling very guilty. And he said, you know, the process that the cells and the embryos go through to become a baby, he said, it's amazing that as we have as many as we do, and you should not blame yourself. And that was very healing for me to hear that, because I did blame myself for that.
So I think that's something any woman who has ever suffered through a miscarriage understands. So I'm glad you're just even speaking to that. Ladies, if you're experiencing that either right now or maybe years in your past, that you're not alone in that feeling.
Definitely not.
And you know, to the point of the doctor, in the vast majority of cases, like, no, it is not your fault. It was nothing that you did.
Yeah.
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 And so now the world's kind of turning upside down.
Yes.
With 9/11. There's
Yes.
a lot of uncertainty. Everyone who was alive at the time remembers where they were.
Yes.
When the news broke. And all of a sudden you have this surprise pregnancy.
Yeah.
Right.
Again, the dichotomy in life, this horrible time in our country. And here I am pregnant with this amazing, soon to be love of my life.
Yeah. And her name?
Ergy.
Which is not a very common name.
No, it is not.
Is there
no.
a story there?
Yes, there is. So my name is Maria Erzsébet Vamos. So Erzsébet is my middle name. I'm named after two aunts, Maria and Erzsébet. And so again, wanting so strong that my beautiful brown hair and brown eyes would be passed on to my child, I'm going to manifest it and give her an ethnic name. She was born this beautiful blonde-haired, blue-eyed Ergy Sue.
So fun.
Yes.
So then you know, launch into motherhood.
Yes.
Yeah. And now
I have two stepchildren who are with us all the time. Yeah. I get them every weekend. They were great. My stepdaughter was an amazing big sister to my daughter, you know, and that's a challenge of blending families is a challenge. Most likely to succeed, that's probably, I think, one of our greatest successes is that we've been married 25 years, going on, you know, 26, and we have had our challenges. It has not been pretty, but we're still here. My stepkids, you know, I think they would both say I'm a great part of their life. I'm not their mom. They have a mom, but I'm important to them. And that is a success to
That's
me.
huge, right? Because again, a very relatable topic of blending families, and every story looks different, right? You know, whether it's a passing of a parent and then 15 years later there's a remarriage, or a marriage that didn't work out and then like immediately there's a new person. I mean, there's all these different parts of the story, and the ages of the kids, and how do they process this, and are they going to accept, and maybe they love the person for 5 years and then 2 years they don't, and it goes up and
for
down,
a long time they don't love you, and that's okay. And
and just going through that, and then introducing a new child, right? Like my story kind of matches Ergie's story, because my parents were both married before. My dad had two kids from his first marriage, and then my mom and dad married, and I'm their only biological child together, but my half siblings were teenagers when I was born. So there's a big age gap, right? But yeah, very similar story.
Imagine that similar stories.
We tell our stories, and this is what comes up. Now, your schooling wasn't over.
No, it was not. So as I think, I don't know if I mentioned, but I did move around a lot. So my husband was a lieutenant at the prison in Sheridan, and then got this promotion to Pennsylvania. So we moved to Pennsylvania. We had my stepson with us, and my daughter. My stepdaughter unfortunately stayed here, though she did go to Pennsylvania for a bit. That always felt like an unfinished piece for me. I'm most likely to succeed, which is academically related in your mind, and I don't have my degree. I was salutatorian and I don't have my degree. What a failure. It felt like a failure. And so the University of Pittsburgh had a small campus in Bradford, Pennsylvania, where we lived. So I thought, I'm going to go back and get my degree. I decided on sociology just because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I find sociology fascinating. Mm-hmm. People are fascinating. Mm-hmm. Psychology has a little too much drama in it for me, whereas sociology is kind of the bigger picture of things. So I landed on that. Some of my professors were younger than me, because I'm like 45 at the time, but I was in class. I was sitting in class. I think I was the only, what they call, quote unquote, adult learner. Everyone else was, you know, 18, mid-20s. And man, what a perspective I had that they didn't. That was such a fun time for me to be in there. I really felt like I was, you know, killing it. Then during that time, my husband was lifting weights and tore both quadriceps while he was squatting. So they had to call the ambulance. He had to have surgery. He couldn't walk. So here I am. I'm working remotely. Going into school. I have two kids in a community where I don't know anyone. I have no support. I have a husband who can't walk. That was a challenging time, but I hung in there. Then on my final, I'm finishing. It's the last final I have. And my husband has to go in for this minor. I don't even remember what it was. I think he was having something removed or something. I don't know. And so I went up to my professor, who is younger than me, which means nothing maybe. But I said, hey, my husband is having surgery and I need to have my cell phone out. I promise you, I will not look at it unless there's some kind of emergency. But can I please just have it out? And he said, why are you not with your husband? And I said, this is the last class of, I'm 45. I am finishing this goal and nothing is getting in the way of this. And he said, if anyone deserves this degree, you deserve it. You have been my best student, my most engaging student. Go be with your husband. And I said, okay, like, let me know when, thank you. Let me know when I could make this up. And he said, you don't need to make this up. You could miserably fail this test and still pass. Go be with your husband. And I got straight A's.
Yay.
Most likely to succeed, finally succeeded.
Wow. And what a perspective too, because that word success has so many layers to
Oh,
it,
so
right?
many
Of
layers.
what does success actually
Yes.
mean? And that,
Yeah.
again, that could be a whole other
That's a
episode.
whole episode.
Wow. Eventually you make your way back to Oregon, but my goodness, you've lived in so many, you've
Yes.
listed so many different places
Yes.
over your life thus far,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah. Lived in Germany, California, Pennsylvania, Oregon, Hawaii, Nevada, Arizona for a little blip with our daughter. So yeah, moved around a lot.
And now you're here and
Yeah.
feeling fairly settled, right?
Yes.
Like,
Yeah.
in one of those maybe slightly calmer chapters of life.
Yes. Slightly calmer chapters of life. Yes.
You have kind of called yourself the peacemaker who stirs things up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
Yeah.
my favorite that you shared here was that you're a type A
Yeah.
hippie.
Yeah. Which is so funny. I would always say, I'm a type A hippie, or I'd be the worst juror because I can see both sides of things, you know? And come to find out, that's the Enneagram 9. So, as a side note, listeners, check out the Enneagram. It's so enlightening. It's been a conversation tool. My daughter, Ergie, is very much into the Enneagram. She's a 3, which ironically, when I'm living my most healthiest life as a 9, I am becoming more 3. So I literally created the better version of myself. And I think as a 9 Enneagram, if you look at the visual of the 9, it's at the top of the circle. It is the balance, it is the blend, it is the understanding of all things, wanting to understand all things. And when I look back on my life, knowing that I mattered, but feeling unimportant, it's weird to wrap your head around. And I think I always knew in my head I was loved, but in my heart, I couldn't feel it. And I think what I really wanted to know was that I was understood. And as I reflected, I was like, okay, I know I'm going to go see Jessica. How am I going to tie this all together in my own head? And it hit me as I was getting into the car that I wanted so much for people to understand me so that they would love me. And I thought, wow, if I understand myself, then I can love myself. I can forgive myself for being the salutatorian who didn't have a degree till she was 45 or however old I was. I could forgive myself for looking healthy on the outside, but being unhealthy on the inside. And so that to know yourself is to love yourself. It is.
And I think in many ways, that's probably what drew you to sociology.
Yeah.
And speaking also as a my college degree is in sociology, and I just loved understanding myself, loved understanding people.
Yeah.
And I mean, everything, you name it, the Enneagram, the Myers-Briggs,
Mm-hmm.
all of the different like tools where you can find out
Yes.
what's your apology language, what's your love language, what's
Yes.
your communication style, what's your personality type, what's da, 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 da. I mean, all of it, the flag
Yes.
page is my personal favorite. And just all of these things that help you see the world with more understanding.
Yeah, there just really is, depending on the society you're in, the time that you grew up in, there just is no clear right and wrong. There's obviously crimes and things like
Sure.
that, but it is so much more gray. And the more we can embrace the gray, the vanilla, I just think the better off we all are, just understanding those differences and commonalities.
That is such a beautiful piece of this current chapter of Story Night, and why it was that, Lucetta reached out to say, hey, let's team up and let's take Story Night to more people, because at the time we're recording this, and probably will always be in the future, like there's a lot of division,
Sure.
right? There's a lot of anger, there's a
Yeah.
lot of judgment,
Yeah.
lots of hatred. But newsflash, something like cancer doesn't care what your political party is,
Exactly.
or an eating disorder, like doesn't care what country you come from. You can go down the list of all of the things we go through just as humans.
Right.
Then you might find out that that person that is the polar opposite of you, you've suffered the same
Yeah.
something.
Yes,
And then
exactly.
suddenly you're like, oh my gosh, we might actually understand each other
Mm-hmm.
in this way. It doesn't mean you have to agree with everything that in the world, but that you can actually find something to see them as a person and
Yes,
who they really are and
exactly.
their story. Well, Maria, thank you so much for taking time to share your story and go back through some chapters. I know that we've touched on so many different topics, and hopefully, ladies listening, you found something that you can relate with and, you know, some good takeaway. We always hope that these stories bring you hope and encouragement. I want to thank State Representative Lucetta Elmer for providing this platform of this season of Story Night. So ladies, thank you so much for tuning in. And if you are within driving distance of McMinnville, Oregon, we have our next live Story Night event coming up on Thursday, May 15th, 2025. And you don't want to miss this story. Bethany Palacios is going to be sharing her inspirational story of starting life as an orphan in West Africa and becoming an American beauty queen. So you can get your free ticket online at storynighthope.com. We would love to see you there. So invite your girlfriends and spread the word. Thank you so much for listening to Maria's story. We hope you come back next time for our next story. And until then, remember, you have a story. Your story matters, and you are not alone.